Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Nerd Overload, the pop and geek culture show that, if it was a Digimon, it would be that cool bipedal wolf that wears jeans.
Oh yeah, he was styling.
Wear Garurumon.
Oh yeah, that's the one. Although I always liked the cactus with boxing gloves.
Yeah, I like that one too.
Yeah, it was like a mix between Strong Bad and the Cactar from Final Fantasy.
Yeah, you know, if any Digimon designs were good, I guess that's about as close.
That's about it. Yeah.
I really liked Digimon when I was younger. I liked Digimon more. I liked Digimon as a media more than Pokemon.
I mean, that first
the
anime
better.
Was better.
Yeah,
than
Pokemon or Digimon Adventures, the original series, is really good. Yeah.
I'm Sam, by the way.
I'm Josh.
I'm Cody, and I don't care one way or the other about Digimon.
I mean, so I always had like a three-way tie between like my favorites.
You had a three-way with Digimon? Which one?
Stop it.
Gross. This is a family show, Josh.
This is a family show.
I said three-way tie, and then you stomped in on my comment.
That's what I do.
But it was a...
this clown show of ours. That's what we do.
Clown show.
Greymon, because I'm basic like that.
Okay.
Oh, you mean like lame Charmander?
Hey, he gets really cool. Like, especially in the first movie when it becomes like War Greymon, has like all the armor and stuff.
I guess the thing I like about Digimon is that their evolutions make no sense.
Oh, no, nothing. Nothing makes sense.
Why does a guy wearing a pelt turn into a regular wolf, turn into a kung fu jeans wearing cool guy wolf man, back into a quadrupedal robo
cyber wolf?
It makes no sense.
Nope.
There's no good Digimon games either. They're all bad.
I've tried Cyber Sleuth, and
I've heard that's okay.
It's all right.
It's like a bad Persona, right?
Yeah, it's a bad Persona.
The original Digimon World was okay.
It was like really obtuse and weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's clunky. It's clunky as all get out too. But then there was a Kabuterimon, the big beetle. I like that one. And then Leomon, the bipedal wolfman with a sword.
Oh, Leomon. Yeah, Leomon's all right. I was like season two, oddly enough. The ones with the armor. Were they egg? They had the armor digivolves.
Oh, okay.
You had Vemon, who was the blue dragon that had flame armor.
Oh, yeah.
And the Digimon that was the villain of that season was one of my favorite designs because it was a worm that turned into basically Kamen Rider. And was voiced by Robert Axelrod, the voice of Lord Zed. and also that weird guy from Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job. The older one with the back problems.
Not David Lee Bahart.
No.
I never really got into like after they got out of like the original like group of teens, I kind of fell off of Digimon.
Oh, anything past the second season I didn't watch. But then again, I watched those exclusively on Saturday mornings.
Oh, yeah.
They were on 4Kids.
Monster Rancher is the better game.
If we're going to get into like, you know, monsters fighting, you know, for, you know.
Oh,
for
yeah.
My amusement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Give me that eye guy. What's his name?
I feel like if you recorded our podcast onto a CD and then put it into Monster Rancher, it would probably make that eye guy.
Probably. Suezo. I think his name was Suezo.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Why do I know that?
It's a good game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, the game actually had a decent, like, weird gimmick.
Yeah, like the racing was, well, it was like a horse racing simulation.
It kind of was.
With fighting
monsters. Yeah. I haven't downloaded it. I haven't played it yet, but there is a Ultraman Monster Rancher game for the Switch.
Nice.
And yeah, so you're like, and they just look like guys in suits. They're not, they look like, they just look like costumes. It's kind of great.
Suezo was correct.
All right.
And like Mochi was like their Pikachu.
Yes. Yes.
Is that the one that looked kind of like a pink duck with a green head?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why do I remember that?
Because monsters rule Monster Rancher.
Anyway, here's some things we've been checking out.
Let's talk about fighting Foodons.
Check it out!
That was a real one, by the way, fighting Foodons.
I remember that, yeah.
They used their culinary magic to bring food to life and then battle them in arenas.
I remember it.
Yeah.
It came on either before or after Flint the Time Detective.
Sure, yeah.
early 2000s was so weird for like stuff that got brought over.
Yeah, Fox Kids is like, look at all this anime we can get for really cheap and then dub it for even cheaper.
Oh yeah, you want cheap dubbing. Ultimate Muscle.
Yeah, it's so much.
I was actually just going to bring up Ultimate Muscle because it's coming back.
Oh, it is.
Than making our own show.
They're remaking it or whatever.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Everything
that's cool.
Old is new again.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody has any original ideas
No one is safe.
Everything is nostalgia bait.
Muscle is back.
And now I'm just waiting for our modern bo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, a guy with an afro fights people with his nose hair.
Yep. That's
a classic.
It. Yeah. Shaman King.
Hey, Shaman King. Well, Shaman King did get a remake.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, it had one recently. Or is getting one. Or something like that.
I've been getting TikToks of clips from the Four Kids One Piece dub.
Oh, and, that's bad.
Yeah, and after, like, you know, ingesting almost 300 episodes of the current dub and then hearing these wild choices they made for the Four Kids dub, it's something else.
Not only that, but all the weird editing, like where they put like the lollipops.
Sanji can't smoke.
You can't have cleavage, and they paint the cleavage lanes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a character whose thing is that he smokes and he can create smoke, and his name is Smoker. In the Four Kids dub, he's Chaser, and smoke comes out of his mouth all the time where the cigarette would be.
Oh, gotcha.
Or all the guns had those like cork and strings painted on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The four kids evocation of like everything. Sailor Moon, Card Captor Sakura.
Sailor Moon was
Clover Way.
Yeah.
Well, either way, it's the same style.
Sure.
The Sailor Moon. But those are pretty close. I will die on the hill for the Sailor Moon dub being amazing.
Deke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Deke dubs.
The voice actress that does Sailor Moon.
Oh, she was great.
She's so good.
Apparently, she was like the Fox Kids affiliate equivalent in Canada of like their after-school kids program.
Oh, nice.
Like the host of their animation block, like after school.
Oh, kind of like how we had Susie on Fox Kids.
Exactly like Susie.
Susie in Columbus.
But that's how they got her to voice Usagi over here, or Serena.
Serena.
Yeah.
Serena and Darren.
Mm-hmm.
Darian.
That's right.
She does a voice on Being Puppy Cat.
Oh, she does.
And it's her doing just wild Serena takes all the time.
Well, that's awesome.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. There's a lot of Sailor Moon-esque things in Being Puppy Cat.
Well, if you're going back to it, the original Evangelion, Misato's voice actress was the voice of Usagi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
Because that was why she was cast.
And that's why Misato's bangs are that way. Mm-hmm. They're Sailor Moon's bangs.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, check them out.
Do we have check 'em outs?
I actually do.
You know what? I do too. I'm going to do mine quick because there's not much to say about it. So last week we talked very, very briefly about how there is a game. You can play Game Boy games.
Yes.
As long as you legally own
the emulator.
Yeah. The cartridge, you can play it on an emulator on your phone. And I have taken this as an excuse to go back and play a Game Boy Color game that I had a lot of fun with when I was much younger. So this emulator is really good for like RPGs.
That's about it
because
the controls really don't work for things that require actual precise play.
Yeah, any precision. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So have you guys ever heard of the Lufia RPG series? Yeah.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
It was a Super Nintendo series. Pretty tropey as far as like,
I mean,
it was like the cookie cutter.
Aren't they all?
Yeah. But no, this one was like, we are a band of four people and we're going to go up against the bad guy to save the island. It was very tropey.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, you're going to fight a god.
Yeah, basically.
Sometimes that's just what you need though. Sometimes you go back to basics and
you
it's
don't
refreshing.
Need, yeah. So they did a, third entry into the series on the Game Boy Color, and it's set 150 years into the future. So you're having some of the characters are the descendants of the original four characters. And it is a pretty stock standard as far as plot goes. It is like the platonic ideal of RPG. Basically, you go from island to island. There is a big boss and there is some kind of thing attacking.
Oh, it's a Metal Gear crossover?
Ha ha ha. Thank you. So you're going from island to island, taking on the main boss.
Yeah,
whatever. The interesting thing about this is the battle system, because instead of four party members or three party members like you normally do, this one, when a fight comes up, it brings up, you know, the enemies kind of like in a Dragon Quest style, but at the bottom,
like in front of you,
but there at the bottom, there is a grid, a 3x3 grid, where you can have 9 party members on your team at any given point, but only 3 of them are allowed to attack each turn based on selecting which one on the vertical row.
Okay.
So
in the next turn, it would be the one behind that one?
No, but you could select any one of the 3.
Oh, okay.
Like one behind another in that vertical row.
Oh.
And if anyone from the front row, your top 3 guys,
gets KO'd.
They get KO'd, fight's over, you die.
Oh.
But flipping characters from the back to the front and moving them around in the grid does not take up a turn.
Okay.
So if your guys are about to die on the front line,
you can pull them back.
You can pull other characters up to the front so that they can sponge some hits while you're healing up your other guys.
So you don't want like all your tanks in the front. You might want to have some reserve ones.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it has the magic system's really interesting. So you have standard magic attacks,
yeah.
but you also have your specialty attacks like your yellow mana in Final Fantasy VII. But it is a synergy style. So each character has one of 4 colors associated with it. And in order to learn special attacks, you have to have them in the grid in a certain way to have the
synergy bonus
of like red 2, yellow 1, blue 3, green 4.
Okay.
And if they have that in that line, they get a bonus to learning a special thing.
Okay.
And if they're not, yet they could still do it once they learn it, but it takes more energy because they're out of alignment.
Okay.
So it's a game where you're constantly shifting your players around and trying to get
optimal
things.
There's a lot more strategy to
it. Once you get the full party, there is a lot more strategy to it. I just wish the plot and the dialogue
was better,
a little more to it. The dialogue is very much, we are the hero and we are going to go to this island. And oh, I'm the lead character. Don't call me stupid, even though I'm dumb. The other thing that is interesting, and then I'll jump off of this, all of the dungeons are randomly generated.
Huh.
Back before that was like a thing?
It was roguelike before roguelike. They tell you within the first 5 minutes of the game, do not waste your time memorizing map layouts, because every time you move from one level to another and enter and exit, they all randomly generate.
It just shifts. All right.
Yeah. Item placement is different. Enemy placement is all on screen. It's not like random invisible battles.
Okay.
It's all completely randomized every time. So if you get a layout that you don't like, just walk in up and down the stairs and it resets it and just try it again. Yeah.
Versus going back and playing like the original Zelda, where I remembered exactly where everything was. And
yep.
I beat the game in like, I don't know, less than an evening.
I can never remember where the second dungeon is. Every time I replay the original Zelda, it takes me forever to find the second dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is. I don't know why it'll never stick in my brain.
You know, I think I've tried playing Zelda 2 more than the original Zelda.
I hate Zelda 2. Like, I love Zelda as a franchise, but Zelda
I think it's
2.
A weird. I think it's an oddity.
An oddity.
I think it's underappreciated.
It's a curio. It's a curiosity.
I think there's a lot of things about Zelda 2 that are really cool, and a lot of things that aren't as cool.
Yeah.
Death Mountain in Zelda 2 is the worst.
In some ways, it is ahead of its time, but in other ways, it sucks.
Yeah, the combat is so like visceral and good.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you fight an Iron Knuckle and you're like blocking high and low attacks.
Yeah, that
is really, really good. And I don't think I've ever seen like
also the whole like side scrolling like thing.
I don't think I've ever seen a 2D platform melee game ever get it that good. Since.
No, yeah, it's just that.
Yeah, because everything else is just tap until they die.
Yeah.
Everybody just wanted the top-down Zelda like the first one, and that is not this game.
I would love to see them try it again and sand off the rough edges.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised someone hasn't made like a spiritual kind of successor.
There's a lot of indie games that are like that, kind of like it, but yeah. They still don't, not exactly.
Speaking of spiritual successors to Zelda games, isn't there one that is someone tried to ape the style of the CDI games?
Oh yeah, Arzette. It's really good.
Yeah, I've heard it's actually really good.
I've played a solid amount of it. It is very good.
Okay.
And the cutscenes are like spot on. They do such a good job.
They're so nasty and weird looking.
Mimicking that CDI animation magic style.
That $25 Russian animation style.
While like mocking it like lovingly at the same time,
like they're lampooning it, but it's like with a wink and a nudge.
Yeah, they obviously have like a lot of love for the actual source material, so it's kind of like a loving lampooning. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was made by this I don't know, a few years ago somebody released like remakes of the two games.
Oh, okay.
The two Zelda Nightmares?
Yeah.
It's the same guy that made those remakes.
Interesting.
He took that engine that he made for those and just made his own game out of it.
I mean, it's the safe way to do it so Nintendo's lawyers don't come knocking at your door.
Of course. Yeah.
But yeah, our set's great. I'd recommend that to anybody.
Right on.
It's fun.
Yeah. Not the CDI Zelda games, though.
No.
No, those were...
Well, I mean, if you're gonna get your hands on those remakes that he did...
Yeah, because they're playable.
Yeah, it makes them... They're still not great, but it makes them...
Bearable.
Yeah.
I love his company's name is CDI, and their logo is like an acorn with an eyeball.
Oh,
nice. That's solid.
Yeah. I like it.
Now, I've been playing Game Boy games on my phone also.
Awesome.
I've put a bunch of time into a translated version of an old Shin Megami Tensei game.
Yeah.
It's Shin Megami Tensei Devil Children.
Okay. And is it like a monster? It's almost like a monster collector style.
Yeah. It's Pokemon within Shin Megami Tensei, which Shin Megami Tensei already kind of was that way anyway. But it kind of, I don't want to say dumbs it down because it doesn't really do that, but it simplifies it a little for the Game Boy Color and makes it more Pokemon-esque.
Okay.
It has a cool system where you carry two guns.
Okay.
And the guns are what summon the monsters. You don't shoot the guns. I don't know why they're guns.
Because it's cool and edgy.
But you load your monsters. A set of monsters into one gun and a set of monsters in the other, and you summon two monsters at a time for battle.
Oh,
yeah, because you got two guns.
Yeah,
and guns
akimbo. Yeah, one like list of monsters comes out of the one gun for the one character, and one list of monsters comes out of the other for the other, and that's how you do battle.
Interesting.
And it's very like it's Shin Megami Tensei battles. Like the spell names are the same and everything.
Okay.
And the monsters don't level up. The only way to make them stronger is to fuse them with other monsters.
That's a SMT thing.
Yeah, which makes them turn into other more powerful monsters.
Yeah.
Except for your like friend, partner, buddy monster from the beginning.
Is that Jack Frost?
No.
No?
It's like this like dog named Kuul, K-U-U-L.
Okay, I only say Jack Frost because he's kind of the mascot.
I mean, he's in the game.
Yeah.
But he's like a Cerberus dog named Kuul.
Okay.
And he levels up. You just feed him other monsters and he gets stronger based on those monster stats.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, it's one of those games where it's an English translation patch, so you kind of just have to play it, you know, any way that you can.
Sure.
But it's cool. I liked it. I finished Fallout Show.
Oh, yeah. How was Fallout Show?
It is excellent all the way around. I think it's my favorite like game
adaptation
that's ever been done.
I've heard it's very, very good, and it very much sets up season two.
Yes. Yeah, though there's big stuff going on for season two. I don't want to spoil it. I think the end reveal and the plot stuff they're doing towards the end is very good.
I know what the what the twist is.
It took a while to get there. I think they could have like maybe
cut a little fat.
Yeah, but when it did get there and they revealed everything,
it was pretty
it was worth it. Like, it's good.
Cool.
It's good writing. It fits the world. It's a great show. It's an all-around great show. If it wasn't connected to Fallout, it would still be a great show.
Sure. Yeah.
Which, next-gen update for Fallout 4 came out the other day, and I've put some time into that.
Mm.
It's been a long time since I played Fallout 4, though, so I can't tell how different it actually is. It feels maybe like it's faster and smoother, but I don't really know.
None of the Fallout games really move all that quick.
I mean, it feels pretty good, but I don't know. It's been
hard
a long
to tell.
Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the frame rate is higher because Bethesda games generally don't have that high of a frame rate. It feels smoother, but I don't know. I mean, it's still pretty good, but it also still has the things in Fallout 4 that I don't care for, like the voiced protagonist and the fact that you can't see your dialogue lines before you pick them. You just get kind of a hint.
Weird, vague vibe.
Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah.
It's just, it's not good. It takes you out of the ability to roleplay your character as whoever you want them to be.
Sure.
Which in New Vegas, which I've been playing before this patch came out, and I've put a lot more time into that. It's so much better.
I love New Vegas.
Yeah,
it's probably still my favorite of the series.
That's the one that everyone's
pretty much
Vegas.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, 3 was great, but New Vegas, New Vegas is there.
New Vegas has the best writing and the most like.
Because that one wasn't a Bethesda, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Obsidian.
Obsidian, and Obsidian usually makes pretty solid games on the whole.
Yeah.
To be fair, Obsidian made Knights of the Old Republic 2, and I felt that one was weaker than the original Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
And they also made Neverwinter Nights 2, and I really didn't care for Neverwinter Nights 2 versus the first one.
Did they make that spy RPG Alpha? Did they make Alpha Protocol? Was that them?
I don't remember.
That game's underrated as
heck. Actually sounds familiar. That sounds like it could be right.
It's a sick game. It's like a secret agent game, but it's like a Mass Effect style secret agent game.
Oh, that's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
They just re-released it on GOG with like some updates to make it run better on modern systems.
Okay.
So cool. Pick that up. Alpha Protocol's cool.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to get into Josh's check 'em outs, and then we'll dig into some news. Why not? I mean, hey, it's what we do anyway, right?
Sounds about right.
Ed Sheeran, Beyonce, Drake, Taylor Swift. Not a single one of these music legends has any idea what our show Longplay is all about. I would bet that not a single one of these music megastars will ever tune into an episode of Longplay here on WZMO. But you can. I'm Greg Dunham, and I invite you to catch Longplay every Friday night at 11 or Saturday afternoon at 3 and give a listen to the radio show that 99.9% of all future Rock and Roll Hall of Famers will never hear.
Whoa, we're back.
Yeah.
From the break.
All right.
Coming in with some high energy
for
the rest of them. Check it out. Check them out and the news.
Excellent. So, actually, high energy. My brain just connected to like two errant brain cells just like
fired
off each other and reminded me of something. So, been getting into classic old wrestling. There was a tag team of Owen Hart and Coco Beware, the guy with the bird.
Uh-huh.
They were called High Energy. They had, and I'll have to look up the picture while you're talking about your check them out. They had the most late 80s, early 90s, like bright neon
aesthetic.
They had like the windbreaker jacket thing. And there was a horror movie that came out recently. There's a scene at the beginning where they're setting up, these two people, they're super nice, but they're kind of hokey. And one of the pictures on the wall is both of them wearing these bright neon windbreakers. And what it is actually is the picture of Owen Hart and Coco Beware as High Energy, but they pasted
their faces.
They photoshopped the two parent actress actor and actress's heads over top of them. I'll have to find it. But Josh, you go in and talk about your check-ems.
Actually, and after Josh is done, I thought of another thing if we need to more.
Oh, yeah, we're going to. Yeah, let's do it. We might have a check-em day. Who cares?
So I've been plugging away at a game. I downloaded Dave the Diver.
Ah, I've heard good things.
Because it's on PlayStation Plus now. I didn't have to pay for it. And I got the Dredge DLCs for free.
Dredge is a sweet game also. I think I've talked about it on here before.
I need to play it. I wanna check that out since I'm in kind of in a fishing mood, I guess.
It's good.
So Dave the Diver, for the audience who doesn't know. That picture is wild.
I found a picture of high energy from professional wrestlers.
Jesus. Yeah. That is like road construction high viz right there.
Uh-huh.
And we've got enough of that locally, don't we?
Yeah.
That's a joke for the local audience.
Yeah.
Narrow casting.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Dave the Diver is a quote-unquote indie game, but it wasn't made by an indie studio.
Dave the Diver.
Can we fish it? So anyway, so Dave the Diver has a very interesting gameplay loop. You play as this diver named Dave, and he has a friend named Cobra, who used to be a kind of a clandestine CIA agent, kind of gun runner kind of dude. He's like, hey, I got a business opportunity for you. There's this thing, this cove called the Big Blue Hole, and basically through some kind of, I don't know, magic or whatever, any species of fish you can think of exist within this area.
It's the all blue.
Yeah.
From One Piece.
Yeah, kind
of. It's what Sanji's looking for, the place where all the oceans meet that has every kind of fish.
Pretty much. And the gameplay loop is you dive down, you catch fish, you find objects, things, and the fish go to a sushi restaurant that is on the coast of the cove. And you also work at the restaurant, helping out the sushi chef. And so you catch more fish, you build the menu for the day, you serve customers, you pour drinks, this, that, and the other. There's also a little bit of restaurant management because you hire other people to make things run a little smoother because you will get busy. You will, you know, and
it's Diner Dash with diving Dash.
Kind of. You don't actually do any of the cooking. You're like kind of just running around serving people, taking the dishes to the customers, cleaning up dishes, collecting tips, things like that. Also, you can kind of like customize the restaurant, you know, bring up the aesthetic, whatever. And you get more likes through this fake food app
thing. Yelp.
Instagram. Yelp. It's like an Instagram, basically, that people are constantly posting to. And that's how you get more customers, yada, yada. And when you get money, you spend it on better diving equipment. You know, better harpoon guns, better suits, more oxygen, you know, go longer, go deeper, things like that. But then there's like weird storyline stuff because you run into these other characters who will, you know, hey, I'm an archaeologist. I want you to find these objects from this ancient civilization. I'm a marine biology student. I need you to find these things for me, so on and so forth. But it's pretty decent. I like it. I like the loop. It's a very satisfying loop for some reason for me.
It sounds like one of those games that's always giving you something to think about in the future.
Yeah.
Like Stardew Valley, where it's like, just one more dive, and then I'll have enough to get this, and then do this, and that's always very satisfying.
Yeah, and you'll notice like as you're playing, and you can like enhance dishes, hence leveling them up, make them worth more, you know. They either have more satisfaction or they cost more money if people will pay, yada, yada, yada. So you start hunting down these specific fish all the time. And the blue hole is also procedurally generated. Mostly. I have noticed there are times, depending on where I am in the storyline chapter or whatever, there's kind of the same look for like a second.
It's probably a bunch of mix and match sections that all go together, like how Spelunky kind of does it.
Yeah, like you'll always find a particular chest in this spot, and you know, things like that. But you know, it randomizes what you find.
It sounds really good. I'm gonna have to play it.
I'm really enjoying it, though. There are a lot of jokes at Dave's expense because Dave is a bigger dude.
That kind of sucks. That's kind of easy, kind of lame.
It's low hanging fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
It is definitely low hanging fruit. It's like people talk about like, oh, you know, I thought divers were supposed to be athletic, and he's like, come on, man. There's like a point where I run into I found sea people.
Do they look like sea monkeys?
No, they're just mermaids.
Oh,
they're just mermaids. That is the ancient civilization that the archaeologist is having me investigate and find artifacts for. Yeah, they're mermaids.
I've always wanted to make a game. Like, I've had this idea for a game where you are snails that fish for whales. It's called snail whalers, and you build your little boat and like upgrade your boat, and then you go out as a snail and harpoon whales. Is that anything?
Maybe not in the current climate. I feel like whale hunting is kind of really taboo.
Fair enough. But it would be like old timey.
I get it.
Like Moby Dick.
Yeah, time. I was gonna Moby say Dick like times. Yeah, like a Moby Dick kind of thing, or you know, like a lot of like old sea shanties and stuff.
And since they're snails, they can move like all around the boat, like up and down. You can go around the boat in a full circle.
Okay, I admit that makes sense.
To throw your harpoons at the whales, and also you would upgrade your ship with like cannons and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. That's one I've been sitting on. TMTM snailer
snailer yeah.
Snailer whalers.
That's a good one.
But for the other thing I thought of, I did watch the controversial AI using movie Late Night with the Devil.
Oh yeah,
because it showed up on Shudder.
I have heard that it's just okay.
Yes, it is. It's just fine.
That the twist is not super great.
No, I mean it's not surprising. There's parts of it that are really good and really well done, and then there's parts of it where it's like they should have trusted the audience a little more. Most of it is shot like it's a late night show. The conceit is this is a late night show on Halloween.
They're in the 70s.
In the 70s, they're kind of struggling with their ratings, and they have a girl that was saved from a satanic cult, and her like...
Oh, so it's got some satanic panic stuff in it.
Yes. And her like guardian are on, and they interview them, and it goes...
wild.
Like you would expect.
A horror movie to go.
I've seen a bunch of stills, and I've watched a couple of trailers from it, and some of it looks like it is an Adult Swim played at 4 a.m.
kind of like an Eric Andre show, kind
like
of
an
thing.
Eric Andre, or like Too Many Cooks, when the Too Many Cooks special,
Too Many
that was a little weird.
Yeah,
it looked kind of like
I love Too Many Cooks. I forgot how much I
like
liked
there's
that.
One shot in particular where it looked like there was a ghost standing behind someone, and it just looked like something off of Tim and Eric or Late Night Adult Swim.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a lot better if they stuck to it being a tape of a late night show.
Oh, sure. Like a found footage thing. Because
they cut into like supposed behind the scenes footage.
Oh, that's...
And it just feels
like... It breaks the immersion.
It just feels like they don't trust the audience to figure out what is going on, so they have to have these behind the scenes
expositions.
Parts, yeah, where they're explaining what is happening. It's like, no, I get it. Just trust that I understand it so it can be more immersive.
Yeah.
I prefer things that don't hold your hand.
Oh, sure.
Where it's like, it's nothing is really explained. Like, if you're paying attention enough, you might pick up on context clues. Like the original Cloverfield for me.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it feels like it's just this thing. They don't have to explain everything to you. Why is this way? Where is this coming from? You know, all this stuff. If you're paying attention enough or through multiple watch-throughs, you'll pick it up. But
yeah, that's what this movie should have done, but they didn't trust the audience enough to go with them on this journey.
Yeah.
And they have the behind the scenes stuff where it's like, oh, everybody's upset, and the cast is, some of them are leaving, and then somebody died off screen, and like, just trust that we understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it'll be more immersive. And that like some of the effects were good, some were less good.
Yeah.
Apparently the AI stuff, it was just the title cards they would use when it would go to commercial break.
There were also the backdrop. There were shots, any kind of artwork for the backdrop was also AI generated.
Mm. And you know what? You can tell because it's not very good.
It's not good. No, the AI generated skeleton like placards, their hands are all messed up.
Yeah.
It's not right.
And it just, it looks like the blandest version of that concept that you could get.
Yeah.
And they, I don't know, I don't understand why they didn't just have any artist could have made
this.
Well,
this movie was made and then shelved for a while. So perhaps they used it when AI generated art
first started coming out.
First hit, and people weren't quite, I didn't know 100% what it was doing, and were still kind of like, I mean, you can use it, but now it's like, no, don't.
Nah, dog.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's not a bad movie by any means. It's better than a lot of horror movies I've randomly watched on Shudder lately.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But it's not anything groundbreaking. Yeah. You can watch better found footage style stuff. It's been done better.
It's been done better. Yeah. All right, so I do have one more check them out, but first I was telling you about the high energy thing and how it was used in another film.
Yeah,
I found out what it was. It is an action called The Wrath of Becky. It's a newer movie. That is the parents. The actors playing the parents' heads photoshopped onto and it was used like it was like in a bunch of different shots of like, oh, these parents are super hokey and stuff, and they have like all these themed photographs, and one of them is very clearly
this
with Coco Beware with his bird, and they're both wearing the giant loud windbreakers from the 90s. But no, the other thing that I checked out, I watched a little bit of Star Trek Voyager.
Ah.
And Josh, I want to talk to you about maybe the worst episode of Star Trek I have ever seen in my entire life.
Okay.
You know Voyager.
Yeah. It's a personal favorite of mine.
Personal favorite.
Yeah, Voyager's good.
What is the absolute worst episode of Voyager in your opinion? And let's see if you can guess the episode that I watched.
Okay. There's two that stand out that I think are not great.
Okay.
There's one where there's a transporter malfunction.
Okay.
And Tuvok and Neelix are blended into Tuvix.
Tuvix is great. Tuvix is a great episode.
A lot of people talk about how Janeway was real awful in her decision to essentially destroy
Tuvix. You got to make the hard decisions. Tuvix. Yeah. Captain.
Mm-hmm.
The other one,
they mention that there's an episode of Lower Decks that specifically is
there's
about
a picture
that.
There's a picture of Tom Paris and Janeway with the salamander babies in Lower Decks.
Hey, guess what?
Was it the salamander baby episode?
It's Threshold. It's the one where they go beyond warp 10
and they mutate
into weird lizard people and have salamander babies.
Yeah.
And then they just leave those babies. They're just gone. They're just gone.
That episode sucks. I don't like that episode.
Yeah, that is the... I've watched a lot of Star Trek. I haven't watched as much as you have, but I've watched a lot of Star Trek. That is the worst episode of Star Trek I have ever seen.
I was going to say the other one was Threshold.
Was Threshold. Yeah. Yeah. Because not only is it weird, I mean, it starts off kind of interesting because Tom Paris, they go beyond warp 10 and Tom Paris starts
in a shuttlecraft.
In a shuttlecraft, and he starts to have like Cronenberg melting.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, his DNA shifts.
The first and second act of that, it's like a suspenseful kind of thing. He's like falling apart and basically whatever, molting or whatever. And then
Cronenberg on a TV budget.
Yeah, essentially. And then in the third act, he and Janeway turn into lizard
people. Yeah, he kidnaps Janeway, forces her to go over warp 10.
And they turn into lizard people.
Yep. And then they have lizard babies
on
a planet.
Weird lizard babies on a planet and then just leave.
Yep.
That sucks. Also,
it's like turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a turtle, like, where you just leave the eggs and then they go to the ocean.
Well, sure, but the fact that they turned Janeway into a lizard was kind of bad. Also, if I'm not mistaken, and you can correct me, Star Trek has gone beyond warp 10 before.
I don't remember.
In different situations, and nothing happened. They didn't turn into weird melting lizard people.
They got lucky those times.
Okay, so...
A wizard did it.
A wizard did it. Well, there you go.
Well, a lot of times they end up going, like, through time.
Yeah, see? You don't turn into a lizard. You go through time. That's it.
Which makes more sense.
It does.
I mean, there's a much later episode of Voyager when future Janeway comes back.
Yes.
and tells Janeway about the like how to beat the Borg.
I believe that's like
I think it's the last episode.
To the I think
it's
finale.
Like a, I think it's like a two or three parter. It's the end of the series.
Yeah, old Janeway tells young Janeway how to break the cycle and create essentially a splinter
Borg,
splinter universe.
Yeah,
because it, you have one universe where they're continue to be lost for years and years years, and then one where
they make it home.
They make it home because old Janeway interfered with young Janeway.
There's a let's see here.
Also, there was an interesting interview with Jane Mulgrew. Was that is
Kate
that her name?
Kate Mulgrew.
Kate Mulgrew. Thank you.
Who was also used to be married to a U.S. senator.
Yes, that's correct.
An Ohio U.S. Yeah. senator.
Yep. And they have mentioned that near the end of Voyager, the writers kind of stopped caring. They kind of were just kind of throwing whatever they could at the wall. They didn't really know what to do. And based on the scripts that she would receive, she decided on her own that Janeway was bipolar. And because that is the only way that she could justify why in one episode she is a good captain and in the next episode
she's kind of awful.
She kind of sucks and is awful.
A big talking point in Voyager, at least within the fan base and the things they like to have a little discourse in, is the fact that Harry Kim never gets promoted.
Yeah.
Of all the other characters on the show and of the main like Brit command crew, mm-hmm. he never gets promoted.
Also, everything Chakotay says is wrong.
Dude, okay, the dude who plays Chakotay is awful. He is a piece of garbage.
Well, I don't know anything about that. I trust you. I don't know anything about that. But I know that when they were writing Voyager, when they're getting ready to write Voyager, they're like, we want to have a Native American.
Oh, I have a whole story with this.
I think I'm about ready to tell that story because I think I know that story as well. They were going to have an Indigenous American character mm-hmm, on the show, and mm-hmm. they wanted to make sure that they were writing the character correctly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they hired
an indigenous culture consultant.
And it turns out that he was not Native American. He was in fact Italian American with no background and basically scammed his way onto the set. And just whenever someone asked him, hey, what do you think about this? He would just make something up.
Not only that,
wow.
Beltane lied about his heritage.
Oh, yeah, because he's Latino. He's not.
Yeah, he's not
Native American.
He's not Native.
The Native American guy on Hey Dude.
Yeah,
actually Latino also.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as bad as them brown facing that one dude into an Indian guy for Short Circuit.
Nothing is as bad as that. Fun fact, if you go to Bloomington, Indiana, they have a monument
birthplace
for
of
the
Janeway.
Future birthplace of Janeway.
Of Janeway.
Yeah.
Kind of like how the one place has Kirk's.
They have a very good statue. Like it's pretty.
Oh, that's an awesome one.
Like,
yeah.
I wish I would go see this.
I wish, honestly, I miss the days of when culturally in the United States that Star Trek was like a more important thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do miss that.
Because it's better than Star Wars.
Yep.
And it always has been.
Okay.
I feel like it's apples and oranges. Where Star Wars
is fantasy, Star Trek is sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Star Wars is what you watch when you're a child, and Star Trek is what you watch when you're a grown adult.
To a point.
I'm being purposely
facetious.
Yeah,
being a little
contrarian
there. Yeah,
contrarian.
But also like it's also kind of true.
There's a sliver of truth to that.
Yeah,
I'll tell you another wild episode of Voyager.
Okay,
that I personally like. But I'm a little biased on this one. Is when they find that old Klingon vessel that's lost in the quadrant, who thinks that the Federation Klingon War is still going on. It's like the stories of when they found old
Japanese soldiers
on islands and thought the war was still going on.
Yeah, so that's a good episode.
I love that episode.
Yeah.
But also, I really like the Klingons.
Do we have time for any news?
No, we don't. We're going to keep talking. No, we're
going
to keep talking about this.
Let's keep going.
Okay, going around the room. Top three Star Trek captains.
Top three Star Trek captains?
Yes.
Out of like all of them?
Yes.
I mean, my number one is probably Picard.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a little biased on that because Next Generation is what I grew up on. And then I watched with...
Sure, that was what was on TV when we were young.
And I watched with my mom.
Yeah.
That was kind of like the bonding moment for me, because my mom grew up on original Star Trek, mm-hmm. and I grew up on Next Gen, which, you know, I feel like is how it was meant to be.
Yeah.
But also, I dislike Picard's personality. He has moments where he is... He can be snarky, but also still classy.
He's not a super friendly dude.
Well, sometimes he's not there to be your friend. He's there to be your boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely doesn't have quite the camaraderie with the rest of the crew. Like, or at least with in original Star Trek, it was, you know, it was Spock, Bones, and Kirk.
We're like best bros.
Yeah.
Always hanging out, going on camping trips and stuff together
mm-hmm.
after they retired or whatever, versus Picard, who it feels like, well, he is friends with, like, you know, Riker and them and in the command.
He is a workplace acquaintance.
Yeah,
it feels like
it feels like the only true real friend on the ship that Picard has is Guinan,
and I would say in the earlier seasons the
Beverly Crusher.
Yeah.
Well, part of that is a guilt thing on Picard's part.
Yes,
because Picard feels he is responsible for the death of Crusher's husband.
Right. And he also is into Beverly Crusher.
Sort of, yeah.
Depending on the episode
and
who wrote the episode.
Yeah.
I think Picard works best when he is playing off of a character with more personality.
Oh,
I think Picard episodes by themselves.
Like Picard and Q's dynamic
mm-hmm.
is great.
Picard and Q is great. Picard and Riker, because they have similar yet differing opinions on things. I think Picard episodes by themselves are some of the weaker ones. And yes, that means I'm talking about the one with the magic flute hands.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that? That's the end of the series.
All Good Things. It's the one where his, the entire memory of dying species gets beamed into his brain, and he essentially lives an entire life as someone from this planet.
Here's the other thing is, like,
he couldn't play the flute, so they had someone come up from underneath the camera.
Yeah,
like
it's really
like
awkward.
A puppet.
I haven't seen that episode. I've only seen the animated GIF.
Oh yeah,
and I can only imagine the Willy Wonka flute.
That's based kind of it. Yeah,
it sounds kind of like that.
Yeah.
But also the disconnect is almost like watching Jareth from Labyrinth do the contact juggling,
when Triumph the insult comic dog has to use his puppet hands for something because they just come up from underneath the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Half the time the one hand is like 5 miles away.
Oh, it's all the way away. Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, like, when you look at the personalities of, like, Kirk and, like, Picard specifically,
mm-hmm.
but then you look at the lore of Kirk and Picard. In the lore, Kirk is called a textbook with legs.
Yep.
He was a top student in the academy. He's supposedly very smart and very knowledgeable, even though he did cheat at the Kobayashi Maru simulation.
Right, the no-win simulation.
But in the show, he comes off as kind of like, you know, a kind of like a Chad, kind of like, you know, kind of like, you know, macho,
brash
macho guy. And you look at Picard, who's very classy and eloquent. But if you look at his start,
he was a hellraiser when he was in.
Yeah. When he was younger, he almost died.
He almost flunked out. Didn't he?
He was
not top of his class.
No, he almost flunked out and he almost died in a bar fight.
In fact, there's an entire episode where it's
Q sends him back
mm-hmm.
to when he was young, granted, he just looks like himself, but he is younger. They quantum leap him. And you know, into his past.
I was going to say they wonderful life-ed him, kind of.
Yeah.
Picard is up there. I think Kirk squeaks it out a little bit for me.
But you also are a bigger fan of TOS.
I'm a bigger fan of TOS, but I think Kirk can hold a show on his own if he is the singular character.
Well, he's more action-y hero.
He is more action, and I like that. I like the little bit of more action-y. So I think it's very close, but Kirk first, Picard second. And I'm going to go Janeway third. Although Janeway and Sisko are very close.
Early Sisko is not as fun.
No.
Versus later Sisko.
When you get closer to
He did write that great song about thongs, though.
Oh,
we can all agree on that.
He did.
There we go.
Yep.
But no, when you get closer to, like, the Dominion War stuff
mm-hmm.
in DS9, Also, just the concept of DS9, I really like.
Sure.
I feel like it broke the kind of the monotony of Star Trek at the time.
Because it's set on a space station and not a ship.
Yeah, and you also...
it's different.
Also, you know, you're basically on a giant truck stop in space.
Yeah, essentially.
So, one, it makes it really easy to have characters come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Versus when you get these weird ones on Next Gen, where the Enterprise is essentially a convention center with lasers.
Yeah. No, that's about right.
Every time I think about like how big the Galaxy class starship the Enterprise D is.
And there's kids and families on there.
And then they get in these huge fights.
Yeah.
And you know, life endangering situations, and I'm
gotta
like,
jettison the battle bridge.
Yeah, well yeah, you gotta
put everybody on the disc and shoot them off, and then
you know,
jettison the elementary school.
Yeah. Yeah. Get Keiko O'Brien and take the children to the saucer craft.
The Picard Day episode.
Oh yeah. I can't believe they brought that back in Star Trek Picard. In one of the first episodes, they go to the museum and they have the
Picard
the
Day
children's banner, which Picard would not have kept that. He hates children.
But
he would have been like, I'm going to put this in the garbage.
But that doesn't necessarily mean he kept it.
Sure.
I mean, Beverly could have kept it. Troy could have kept it.
That's true. And if Beverly would have kept it, it would have been.
I feel like it would have
spite him.
I feel like it would have been a Troy thing, though.
Yeah, it would have been a Troy thing.
I definitely feel like it would have been a Troy thing because I feel like Picard Day was Troy's idea.
Donna Troy was so useless.
Also,
she's like the character from Team America. The kid that's an empath.
The empath. Yeah.
And she just states the obvious emotion that someone in front of her is having.
I saw a meme the other day. There's a joke where you know, yeah, Kirk is fine and all, but you gotta think, how unhinged is Picard that his therapist has to be right next to him on the bridge to make decisions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Pike is a really great captain.
Pike was a very good captain, yes.
If you watch Strange New Worlds, man, really good captain.
I have heard so many good things about Strange New Worlds that it, like, a lot of people griped about Discovery. A lot of people don't like Discovery, apparently. I don't know. I haven't watched Discovery. I've seen the Klingons.
It was too action-y for me.
That's the thing. I felt like a lot of people talked about how Discovery felt more like kind of like Abrams Trek.
It was Abrams Trek, but higher octane and set in the main universe, which made it bad. I'm okay with hyper action, dumb action movie Star Trek if it's in its own pocket universe, the Kelvin universe.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Give me boring science.
This is like the conversation I like to have every time Star Trek ever gets written up around people that I know. I love Star Trek at its...
when it's being cerebral.
When it's sci-fi.
Yes.
When it's like...
well, not even when it's being
when
sci-fi.
When it's good sci-fi literature happens to be TV.
I like the fact that most of Star Trek, and specifically Next Gen, is mostly people just talking.
Yeah.
And they're having really great conversations, and and it's about the lofty ideals of where we could go as people, as species, as...
Measure of a Man is my favorite
episode. Measure of a Man is a fantastic episode.
It's my favorite episode
and
of
Next Gen. The fact that it gets referenced in Picard later, because that dude comes back, or at the very least, he's name-dropped.
Yeah.
When they bring... because there's like... oh, that I haven't watched Picard at all, but
It's like a head scientist from the Daystrom Institute.
Yeah, but they build a bunch of androids, and the argument from Measure of a Man basically gets brought up again.
At what point does artificial intelligence be considered actual intelligence?
Sentience.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really interesting episode, and there is no action to it. It's all courtroom.
It's a courtroom drama.
in one room, essentially.
There's a Strange New Worlds episode that is also a courtroom drama one room about... whether or not one of the characters is going to be court-martialed for being an alien species that the Federation doesn't like
in
a kind of racist way.
Interesting.
In a racist way.
It's not kind of. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. Okay.
The whole Stranger Worlds is great. It's great Star Trek. It hits that cerebral beat. Like, it's
yeah. I also like the fact that they kind of got back to like their roots a little bit, like as far as like look wise and goes, everything, yeah. like costume design and everything else.
Star Trek is best when it's a little bit hokey.
Oh, yeah.
It's got at least 10% hokiness. Yeah. At least.
Look at season one of Next Generation. It still pretty much has the production of TOS.
Oh, what I love about going back to old episodes of Next Gen is now that we have crisp 1080p high def images, look at how many like production errors there are on like the touch screens. There's like smudges and like stuff where people have been like touching the plexiglass. And they've left thumbprints and smears
on the L cars panels.
And there are like visible like screws holding things together. Like it looks so chintzy in 1080p.
But on
regular old tube TVs, you wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah, you wouldn't have seen that at all. But then there's like, you know, get the behind the scenes stuff, like how uncomfortable those jumpsuit.
Oh, it about ruined what's his name's back?
Frakes.
No, not Frakes.
Oh, Picard.
Stewart. Yeah, he really.
That's why he does the Picard maneuver all the time,
because his shirt kept riding up.
He hated it.
Yeah,
it was definitely better when they got into like the movie uniforms, where it was like jacket and pants were separate things.
We gotta wrap things up, but I do think it's interesting that none of us said Scott Bakula.
I didn't.
Is it interesting?
I know.
I don't care for Enterprise.
No one does.
No.
I don't think anybody does.
There's been a resurgence of people who have gone back and like, you know what? It's not really that bad. It does go into the explanation of why TOS Klingons look so different from TOS movie and Next Gen.
Why
Klingons.
Do we need that when we had the DS9 episode where they go back in time and all they had was Worf?
We don't talk about that.
You leave it there. You don't need any more explanation.
Not only that, but the fact that they went back specifically to the Trouble with Tribbles episode.
Yeah.
I am all about that.
That was a great.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. It was.
Yeah.
It was the reference where the reference needed to be made.
Exactly.
There's one thing about I feel like Next Generation I think should have had. Now, granted, there was a comic much, much later in the last 10 years or so that goes to it. There is no Mirrorverse episode of Next Generation.
No, I suppose there isn't.
No, there just isn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Voyager had one. I'm not sure. Well,
they
DSA
didn't feel like they needed to go back to that well.
Yeah.
Voyager probably didn't need to do it either.
That's true. But I don't know. I like seeing the what could have been what versus what is.
I do think that they traded out the Mirror Universe episodes for wacky holodeck shenanigans.
Oh, man. When Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes comes out and he thinks he escaped the holodeck, and it's a logic puzzle.
Or like the one where they're playing Robin Hood for the episode.
I have a shirt with Worf on it that says I am not a merry man.
Yes. Very good.
Or the one where there's a malfunction and Data's I don't know if it's like his personality or just what kind of his actual natural ability gets locked into a old west holodeck program,
mm-hmm.
but the safety protocols are malfunctioning, so every character, good or bad, is just as fast and just as strong as Data, and Worf has to have a gunfight with a Data outlaw.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to die. But also, Worf gets his butt kicked by blue barrels. So anyway.
There is last thing.
Yes.
There was a pair of episodes that seemingly had nothing to do with each other, but comes back to it. In the first, it's either first or second season, there is an episode where the Bynars, the little aliens that are ruled by their computer.
Yes.
Take over the ship because they need the computer for like a half hour while their sun has an eclipse, because it's going to knock out the computer. And if their main computer on their planet gets knocked out, their species is going to die. So they trick Riker into falling in love with a more realistic than real hologram named Mirouette or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was like a one-time thing, you know, and then seasons later, you get an episode where Riker thinks that he's blacking out and losing time. And he wakes up and it's like 30 years in the future. he has a son on the ship and he's been captain of the ship for a while and Picard's been made admiral and everyone's happy. It's the perfect future. And then the son shows him a picture of Riker and the son and the mom
is
and the
Mariette.
Mom is Mirouette because the kid is actually a psychic and that memory of the perfect holodeck lady was stuck in Riker's head so strongly that the psychic child thought that that was a real person.
Though
and it comes back around.
Though speaking of psychic children, there's a TOS episode, and I want to say it's in season one, the kid who has psychic power.
Oh, yeah. Is it the one that comes onto the ship or the one that is...
The one that comes onto the ship.
Okay, so not the space baby.
No. No, the one that, like, every time he throws a tantrum, he makes something weird.
Yeah, happen. That's a good one. That's a good episode.
I want to say that's, like, episode, like,
that's,
3 or 4.
That's a Twilight Zone episode.
It is essentially the Twilight Zone episode in space.
Yeah, but also, yeah.
Cornfield.
But also, I really like the TOS episode where the two Kirks, you have passive Kirk and aggressive Kirk.
Yeah. That one started with the
dog.
The alien dog with a horn glued to its forehead.
The Cocker Spaniel with a horn on its head.
Yeah,
yes.
got split in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I feel like of all the Trek, all we've really done is talked about Next Gen. I feel really bad about
that. All right. That's not a problem. Sometime I'll get into TOS and we'll talk about the Gorn or something.
The Gorn.
Oh, yeah, the Gorn. Anyway, we got to wrap things up. You have been listening to Nerd Overload. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can find us each and every day over at nerdoverload.com.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, support our Patreon.
You can find everything at links.nerdoverload.com, all our socials and links and all that fun stuff.
Oh, that fun stuff, yeah.
You can send us an email at staff@nerdoverload.com, and we might read it on the show. You can leave us a voicemail on the Nerd Overload hotline. The number for that's 419-561-5556. Leave us a voicemail, and we'll play it on the show, or text message.
Or text message,
works.
Yeah, they'll all work. You can find all of our back episodes on various podcast apps, such as Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. They're all on YouTube.
Yep, we are back on YouTube,
back
gang.
On YouTube. Finally, I'd like to thank Parker for helping us out over at the Facebook page, and David Pencil for the use of our intro and outro. Again, thank you all for tuning in, and you can check us out next week.
Boldly go, where no man has gone before.
If you're my trash can, please come home. We miss you.